And thank you so much for this opportunity here today. I was not expecting this, so and it's good to have the 100% of support of the Cuban community here, you know? That is very important. That is something for the press, you know? We can use that. Exactly. That's right. So thank you very much for this. I am very happy to be here in Montana. I was invited last year. Jan told me in Chicago, why you don't come to Montana? I said, well, coordinate something, I'm going to be there. I am very happy to be here and to see everything I have been able to see in these 2 days, because I came yesterday. So I'm going to do this presentation. It's about Cuba. It's about Cuba and United States. This is the 22nd university I have been able to do this presentation. And at the end, if you have any questions, please feel free to do it. People believe that as diplomat, you are expert in everything. And people want to know about everything. And if I don't have the answer, I get back to you. This is about, again, United States and Cuba. And you can see this is, of course, Washington Memorial in D.C. But this is Jose Martí Memorial in Havana. And Jose Martí is our national hero. And you can see how similar they are. And if you see our flags, you see that we have the same colors in our flags. This is because, of course, we have a lot of history together. And we cannot change that. And we have many things that we share. And after more than 50 years, we are in the best moment in the relations between Cuba and the United States. We don't want to wait another 50 years. We really believe that relations is what the majority of the people here in the United States and in Cuba wants, and is what is something good for both countries. I'm sorry for my English, probably need to improve, but this is a good opportunity to practice. I have been told that I have 40 minutes to do this. You know that Cubans are famous for long speeches. But I'm not going to break any record today, so don't worry. I have some opening questions for you, because I really believe that is important. And the first question is, what do you know about Cuba? That is a very important question. Every time I have the opportunity to do this presentation, I ask the people, what do you know about Cuba? I get different answers. But the real is that people don't have enough information about Cuba. There is a lot of misinformation about Cuba. When you ask, what do you know about Cuba? People say, okay, Cuba is famous because cigars, because rum. Some people mention Fidel. But the real issue is people don't have information about my country. I remember one student in American University back in D.C. that told me, I know about Cuba. And I say, what do you know about Cuba? And he say, I know I love Lucy. The TV series show, and I say, wow, Cuba is not Ricky Ricardo, and you missed the last 50 years, by the way. But unfortunately, it's like that, you know. People remember Bay of Pigs, people remember the Missus Crisis, but that was 60 years ago. What about now? So, second question, would you like to visit Cuba? You can raise your hand. Okay, that is a wonderful support. Another, we need a photo for the press, you know. That is another thing that always happens. Every place I visit, I ask that question, and almost the majority of people say, I want to go to Cuba. Great. Do you consider that Cuba and the United States can have normal relations? The real question is, why not? Why we cannot have normal relations between Cuba and the United States? Oh, because we are communists. The United States has wonderful relations with countries that are communists. How many soldiers do you lose in Vietnam? And you have a wonderful trade relation with Vietnam. Oh, because we only have one political party? United States has wonderful relations with countries that don't allow political parties. So what is the real excuse? Human rights? No, that is not the real excuse. Have you been in Cuba? You can raise your hand. Okay, now you can see what is the real problem. The majority of the people wants to go to Cuba, but the majority of the people has not been able to go to Cuba. And that is the main problem that we have right now. And for that reason, we always talk about the travel ban. As Americans, you can go wherever you want. But in order to go to Cuba, you need a license. Why? Why you can go to all the countries in the world, but not to Cuba? We are that threat to the United States? And the last question is, do you consider that Cuba received fair treatment in the media? Well, this is for the end. If at the end of this presentation you already knew everything I'm going to show today, and you read it in the media and you see it in the TV, it's because we received fair treatment in the media. But let's see what happened. So let's start with this quote. Why the Cuban Revolution? Why we made the revolution in 1959? You know, why the Cuban did that? And I have this quote. I believe that there is no country in the world, including any and all the countries under colonial domination, where economic colonization, humiliation, and exploitation were worse than in Cuba, in part owing to my country's policy during the Batista regime. Batista was the former president of Cuba, the former dictator of Cuba. I approved the proclamation with Fidel Castro made in the Sierra Maestra, when he justified call for justice and especially a yearning to rid Cuba of corruption. I will even go further. To some extent, it is as though Batista was the incarnation of a number of things on the part of the United States. Now we should have to pay for those sins. In the matter of the Batista regime, I am in agreement with the first Cuban revolutionaries. That is perfectly clear. You know who said that? You have any idea who said that? In the majority of the cases, people don't know. So let me help you. President Kennedy, 1963. And this is the man that approved Bay of Pigs. This is the man that deals with the Cuban Missiles crisis. And I really believe that thanks to the experience of Bay of Pigs, we avoid a nuclear disaster during the Missiles crisis. And at this point, 1963, some people really believe that he was trying to improve the relations between Cuba and the United States. Remember that, unfortunately, in January 3, 1961, President Eisenhower cut the relations with Cuba, 17 days before President Kennedy took office. But look at this. When you want to know what was Cuba before the revolution, I recommend to see The Godfather, second part. Do you remember the movie, The Godfather, second part? That was Cuba. It was not the Corleone family, but we have the mafia in Cuba trying to create a new Las Vegas. That was Cuba, a place full of corruption and with many problems. So that is the idea, to try to explain why the Cubans support the revolution in the beginning in 1959. But let's start with this. What is Cuba? Well, everything I'm going to show today comes from the World Bank. So it's not Cuban propaganda. You can check it online. And the most important, if you don't believe me, go to Cuba. So Cuba is a population of 11 million of people. Our area, we are smaller than Pennsylvania. Our GDP, according to the World Bank, is $77 billion of dollars. In 2013, is the last number that they have. Our GDP is number 67 out of 195 countries. And it's important to remember the GDP. It's important to remember that number. Our labor force right now is more than 5 million of people. But look at this. 10% of that labor force is in the private sector right now. That is a huge change in Cuba in the last 10 years. 10% of the labor force is in the private sector. And according to the World Bank, our per capita income is $6,789. So when you say about Cuba, look at this. Life expectancy, 79 years old. Births attended by a skilled health staff, 100%. Mortality rate, 4 children per 1,000 live birth. Immunization, 99% of our children receive all the vaccines for free. The 1% that don't receive the vaccine is because they don't want, because religious reason, and we respect that. We have 6.7 doctors per 1,000 people in Cuba. According to the World Health Organization, 44% of the state members report less than one doctor per 1,000 inhabitants, and we have 6.7. For that reason, we have doctors almost everywhere. Right now, we have doctors in 65 countries working. 100% of the Cuban population know how to read and write. But look at this. According to the United Nations, more than 700 million of people don't know how to read and write right now in the world. 95% have access to improved water sources, and 93% has access to improved sanitation facilities. And let me say this right now. I don't come here to say that we are perfect. I don't come here to say that we are better than you. I come here to say that we are very proud of those sins, and we can work together, and we can do many more things together. And this is part of why the Cuban Revolution has the support of the majority of the people in Cuba. And if we want to change something in Cuba, we need the support of the majority of the Cuban people. So change can have to come from the Cuban society. More information about Cuba. According to the World Bank, we spend 12.8% of our GDP on education. In 2010, that was the highest investment in education worldwide, according to the World Bank. We spend 8% of our GDP in health. And this is from our sources. To health and education is allocated 51% of total expenditure of 2017 budget activity. So you can understand that we know what are our priorities for Cuba. According to the World Bank, we only spend 3.5% of our GDP on the military. And according to the World Bank, we are a country that is considered in the upper middle income country. United Nations Human Development Index 2015, Cuba is number 67 out of 188 countries. So every time that you hear, okay, but Cuba is a country and everything is bad in that country. No, it's not like that. Of course, if you ask to a Cuban, they're going to say, okay, we can improve many things. But never forget our GDP. So everything that I show today is with limited resources and with the U.S. embargo. And I'm going to talk about that later. More information about Cuba. Sports. I love sports. I love sports. And you know how expensive sports are. So this is Cuba in the Olympic Games. Of course, summer Olympic Games, because we don't have any snow in Cuba. We cannot participate in the winters Olympic Games. But look at this. Right now, we have 220 Olympic medals, 77 gold Olympic medals. And that is something huge for a country like Cuba, you know? And if you see before the revolution, you're going to see that we only have like 10 medals in the Olympics. And right now, we have 220. This is about baseball. In Cuba, we love baseball. And according to the source I check, 199 players born in Cuba have played Major League Baseball. The first was in 1871, so a long time before the Cuban Revolution, Esteban Bellán. But look at this. In 2016, last year, Cuba was number three with 18 players born outside the U.S. And the Hall of Fame, I have been able to visit Cooperstown twice. And I found that right now you have, with the three new members that you're going to have this year, you have 315 members of the Hall of Fame. Only 10 are Latinos, but 4 are from Cuba. But look at this. Cubans are the only players that have to defect in order to play in Major League Baseball. If a Cuban player wants to play in Major League, they have to sign a letter and say, I'm not going back to Cuba, I'm not going to bring back money to Cuba. And look at this. Since 2010, big league teams have signed at least 25 Cuban players to Major League contracts worth at least $1 million for a grand total of $645 million. That money don't go to Cuba. And for that reason, right now in Congress, you have this bill, H.R. 573, a congressman from New York, Jose Serrano, that introduced this bill in order to allow Cuban players to come here, play Major League Baseball, and go back to Cuba. Look how difficult is the relation between both countries, even for baseball. More about Cuba. I love Twitter. You know, I do a lot of tweets because I believe it's a challenge. You have to put all your ideas in 140 characters. So I found a lot of information in Twitter, and this is from NASA, and they say, happy birthday to Arnaldo Tamayo Mendez of Cuba, first Latin American and first person of African ancestry in space, was a Cuban. And we are proud, of course, of that. According to the World Health Organization, last year, Cuba is the first country in the world to receive validation for eliminating mother-to-child transmission of HIV and syphilis. According to WWF, Cuba is the only country in the world today that meets the criteria for sustainable development. And according to UNICEF, about children, Cuba has eliminated severe child malnutrition and is the only country in Latin America that can say that. Internet. I know I put this because some people say, okay, but you don't want internet, you don't have internet in Cuba. No, we have internet. It's expensive, it's slow, but I remember I saw internet for the first time at the university for free in the 90s. Was terrible, but was internet. And right now, we open internet for the people, and it's in public spaces. We have 200 Wi-Fi zones in Cuba right now. It's not enough, but you can go now and you can see the children, the kids in the Malecón, that the mayor mentioned, doing the Facebook, doing Twitter, doing everything that all the persons here, the kids here do, probably. And according to our sources, almost a quarter of a million of Cubans connect to internet daily in Wi-Fi points. So again, it's expensive, but it's slow, but we're trying to improve that. I'm going to talk more about that at the end. But the problem is not Cuba. According to United Nations, less than 50% of the human population has access to internet. So it's not about Cuba. The problem is that you need infrastructure, you need technology to connect to internet. So when you talk about Cuba, why you don't talk about Africa, why you don't talk about so many areas in Latin America or in Asia that don't have internet? And last year, when President Obama announced a new moment between Cuba and the United States, this is the journalist from CNN in Havana. We have CNN in Cuba. You have a journalist from CNN in Havana, Patrick Ottman, and he put this tweet that say, trying to watch Susan Rice, Ambassador Susan Rice, webcast on loosening of Cuba restrictions, but getting a prohibited location error message. So he was not able to connect in Cuba to internet because it was a broadcast, I believe, from a think tank in Washington. I was not able in Cuba. And I replied to him, and I put this in my Twitter account. This proves at least three things. The embargo is still in place. There is internet in Cuba, and it's limited by the same embargo. He never replied to me. But my ambassador also put one tweet that say, okay, but it's not Cuban fault. It's U.S. administration with embargo. And he replied and say, yes, it's true. It's that. But we are trying to improve the internet in Cuba. More information about Cuba. Our key trading partners. You can see, for example, in exports, we have Venezuela, we have Canada, we have Netherlands, and we have China. And in imports, we have Venezuela, China, Spain, and Brazil. So when people come to the embassy and say, how is to do business with Cuba? How can I do business with Cuba? I always say, ask to the Canadians. Ask to the people in Spain. We are doing business with everybody. The problem is the embargo. And for that reason, we have a wonderful support against the embargo in the world. I'm going to talk about that. And look at this. This was only last year between Cuba and the United States. Even with the embargo, we received 229 business delegations in Cuba. And we had 23 trade agreements signed between Cuba and the United States. And we have relations with 25 business associations, especially with the U.S. Chambers of Commerce, because people here want to do business with Cuba. The problem is the embargo. 90 U.S. companies with 240 businessmen and four state representatives attend the Havana Fair. It's the trade fair that we have in Cuba in November 2016. So people want to do business here with Cuba. More information. Cuba is not isolated anymore. We have diplomatic relations with 191 countries, orders, and institutions, 190 of the 193 United Nations member states. So when we reestablished diplomatic relations with the United States was the only country in the Western Hemisphere that doesn't have relation with Cuba. We have relation with almost every country. And we have 114 foreign diplomatic missions in Cuba, and we have 122 Cuban embassies and missions abroad. If you compare that with other countries, you're going to see that those are very good numbers. Sometimes important countries don't have so many embassies abroad. Of course, a Cuban embassy sometimes is a house with a flag and two people inside working hard. We don't need a big budget to have embassies abroad. But don't worry, here in the United States, we have more than two people. And of course, about cooperation, you can see why Cuba is so well known in the world. So far, more than 300,000 collaborators from Cuba have provided service in 158 countries. Right now, we have more than 50,000 Cuban healthcare workers providing service in 65 nations. Half are doctors. So we have doctors in 65 countries, as I mentioned before. Thanks to the Yes I Can program, is an educational program that we create. Almost 10 million of people have left illiteracy behind in 30 different countries. More than 68,000 students from 157 countries have graduated in Cuba so far. And right now, this is one school that is very well known in Cuba and in many countries. It's the school for Latin American medicine that we create in Havana. At the beginning, it was only for students from Latin America, but right now you can see that we had students from 117 countries and more than 25,000 medical graduated from 84 countries, some of them from the United States. And that is something incredible. These are students that goes to Cuba for free. They become doctors, and the only thing that we ask is after you graduated, go back to your community and do your work there. It's the only thing that we require. This was something that I like to show in the universities and to people, because sometimes you don't read this, but this was in the New York Times in 2014, and this was an editorial about the cooperation that Cuba has been doing with the world. And they say, Cuba has a long tradition of dispatching doctors and nurses to disaster areas abroad. In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina in 2005, the Cuban government created a quick reaction medical corps and offered to send doctors to New Orleans. The United States, unfortunately, say no. And they say, okay, this is politics. We offered 1,000 doctors to come to New Orleans. And unfortunately, President Bush say no. And we had the earthquake in Pakistan. Pakistan asked for help, and we sent the doctors to Pakistan. At that time, we didn't have diplomatic relations with Pakistan. And we did the same on September 11. We offer our airports, we offer our airspace that day, September 11, 2001. And I put this in Twitter in 2015 when you unfortunately commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Katrina. This was what our former president, Fidel Castro, said in September 19, 2005. There is nothing strange about the behavior of Cuba, which does not hesitate to offer the people of the United States the immediate dispatch of experienced doctors with the essential resources needed to administer emergency care to people in mortal danger following a serious natural disaster. So let's go to relations between Cuba and the United States. Everything changed on December 17, 2014, when both presidents announced to the world that they were ready to start a new moment between Cuba and the United States, and they were trying to reestablish diplomatic relations. Probably you remember that day. And this is the Cuban national newspaper, Granma. And you can see that we published both speeches, President Raul and President Obama, in Spanish for all the people in Cuba was able to read that. I was trying to see that here in the United States. Unfortunately, I didn't find any single newspaper that published our president a speech. And you can see, for example, this is the New York Times, and they put Fidel Castro, not even President Raul Castro, even when President Fidel Castro has not been in power since 2006. But after that, why December the 17th? Well, I have been told that here in the United States, you love polls. You always want to know what people think about something, you know? And according to all the polls, American polls, the majority of the Americans wants better relations with Cuba. And also, the majority of the Cuban Americans in Miami wants better relations with Cuba. I don't have time, unfortunately, to explain all this poll. But, for example, this is from Florida International University. And you know that we have 2 million of Cuban Americans living here in the United States. We have Cubans in all the 50 states. We have more than 300 Cubans in Alaska. I don't know what they do that there. But in any case, we have Cubans in all the 50 states, but 1.2 million live in Florida. The majority in Miami-Dade County. So when you talk about Miami-Dade County, you're talking about the majority of the Cuban-American population. And according to Florida International University, 68% of Cuban-Americans in Miami-Dade support normalizing relations with Cuba. You see? And we have another poll. Unfortunately, I don't want to take too much time. So we start negotiations. The good news, we had women in charge, and that is good. and after that, we have the first meeting between Minister of Foreign Affairs of Cuba and the U.S. Secretary of State. This was in Panama during the Summit of the Americas. And after that, we have the first meeting between a U.S. President and a Cuban president. And you know what? We are still here. Nothing but happened. We didn't see the Armageddon after that, you know? And because you remember, for many years you heard, well, is you do the relation with Cuba, this is going to be the end. Well, it's not the end. And after that, we have the embassy in Washington, D.C., the place I work, in Washington, D.C., and you have your embassy in Cuba in August 2015. And another meeting between both presidents in New York during the United Nations General Assembly. So, another important moment. In May 29, 2015, the United States removed Cuba from the list of a state sponsor of terrorism. We have been in that list since the 80s. Nevertheless, there is not a single evidence that we commit any crime against the United States. But we were in that list for many reasons, because we help and we send soldiers to Africa. Well, you need to read what Nelson Mandela said about that. Oh, because we help the movement of liberation in Latin America. Oh, some of those movements are right now in power in Latin America. But never you can read, you're not going to read never that we commit any crime against the United States and not here in U.S. soil. Nevertheless, I know how important terrorism is for the United States. I have been able to visit the three places that are part of the 9/11. I was in New York, I was also in Pennsylvania, and of course I can see the Pentagon almost every day in D.C. But you know what? We commemorate September 11 before the United States. Why? Because a Cuban diplomat here in the United States was killed in New York in September 11, 1980. People don't talk about that, but we know what terrorism means. And in 1967, some Cubans put a bomb in a civil plane, and they killed 73 passengers, the majority of them from Cuba, and the plane was a Cuban plane, Cubana de Aviación Flight 455. So we know what terrorism means. Unfortunately, one of those people is still in Miami, free. But again, this is part of the history, but we know what terrorism means. So when at the end, United States removed Cuba from the list of a state-sponsored terrorism, we said, well, that is justice, you know? We never deserve to be in that list. And because I am in one university, I always try to show information for the students to think about that. And look at this. According to this secret memo from the CIA, and you can see the source here, right now there is proof that foreign dictator Augusto Pinochet personally ordered to put a bomb in Washington, D.C. to kill the former Minister of Foreign Affairs of President Salvador Allende. And look at this. This is Secretary of State Scholz wrote to President Reagan. Nevertheless, this is a blatant example of a chief of state direct involvement in an act of state terrorism, one that is particularly disturbing both because it's occurring in our capital and since his government is generally considered to be friendly. And you know what? They killed Orlando Letelier, but they also killed his secretary that he was a U.S. citizen. And I don't remember that United States put Chile in the state sponsor of terrorism. I don't remember that United States put Pinochet in, put an embargo against Pinochet. So every time that people come to Cuba and say, okay, this is about human rights, I say, oh, you need to ask to the people of Chile who was Pinochet. You need to ask to the people of Nicaragua who was Somoza, or to the people of Cuba who was Batista, because you don't see that in Cuba. Not in the 59, not in the 60s, 70s, 80s, not right now. So another important moment. You know the place and you know your former president, but this is my ambassador. For the first time since 1959, a Cuban ambassador present credential to a U.S. president. So right now we have an ambassador in D.C. This is our embassy. This is a beautiful place in 16th Street, and according to the D.C. authorities, is the oldest building as an embassy right now in Washington, because the ones that opened before changed the location to Massachusetts Avenue, and we are still are in 16th Street. This was the man behind the construction of the building, and this was the first Cuban ambassador with that title here in the United States between 1923 and 1925. More information, I'm sorry, more polls, but you can see, for example, this is a poll from Atlantic Council, and you can see a poll in four different states. I'm sorry, I don't have the number from Montana, but probably if we do a poll here, we are going to see the same support. But the idea is that according to this poll in Iowa, Indiana, and Ohio, and Tennessee, 68% support the ties with Cuba. And look at this. This is Gallup. For the first time since 1996, the majority of the Americans has a good opinion about Cuba, 54%. And I always say, okay, we are talking about people that the only thing that they read is not good things about Cuba. And we are talking about people, thank you, that has not been able to travel to Cuba. If we have more Americans traveling to Cuba, I can assure you that those numbers are going to be better for sure. But right now we are talking about the majority of the American people. In the last 2 years, we had five members of the cabinet in Cuba. You can see Secretary of State, Commerce, Agriculture, Transportation, and Health. We have 10 senators and 43 members of the House. Right now we have senators in Cuba. And we have eight governors that visit Cuba in the last 2 years. I'm talking about the governor of New York, Arkansas, Texas, Virginia, Missouri, Louisiana, West Virginia, and Colorado. And we're talking about people from both political parties, not only Democrats, that has visiting Cuba. And when they come back, you can check, and they say, we have opportunities in Cuba. So we are talking about everything right now between Cuba and the United States. We are talking about environment, law enforcement, mail, claims. Many people believe that the problem between Cuba and the United States is because we took properties from U.S. But look at this. We don't only took properties from the U.S. We took properties from Canada, Great Britain, France, Spain, and Switzerland. But we already had agreement since the 80s or since 1967 that solve those reclamations from those governments, and the only problem was that the United States was not able to sit down and talk with Cuba about all these issues. We are talking about human rights, we are talking about global health, we are talking about travel, commerce, internet and telecommunications, security of trade and travel flow, and of course about the Colombia peace talks, because I don't know if you're aware that the peace for Colombia was signed, the agreement was signed in Havana. In the last year, the U.S. and Cuba formed a bilateral commission, and since the reestablishment of relations, Cuba and U.S. have signed 22 bilateral agreements. I mentioned today before that one of the last agreements that we signed between Cuba and the United States was between Everglades and the Ciénaga de Zapata in Cuba, in Matanzas, the swamp, the place for Bay of Pig. And it's very symbolic, you know, because Everglades is in Florida, and La Siena de Zapata is in Matanzas, your hometown, and it's the place for Bay of Pig. But they face similar challenge about environment, about preservation, and we signed that agreement. That is something that we would like to do here, probably with Yellowstone or something like that. We received 19 high-level visits, 13 from the U.S. and 6 from Cuba, and 42 technical meetings and cooperation activities. But look at this. Right now we have diplomatic relations, but we don't have normal relations. Why? This is my ambassador last year, a speech for our National Day, and he said, in Cuba, we believe that bilateral relations with the United States will be normal only when we exercise full sovereignty on all our territory, when we are no longer under the sanction regime, and when no specific programs are funded to alter our way of life. So what that means? Well, that means that the embargo is still in place and it's a sanction regime. That means that Guantanamo is still there and is part of our territory, and we want Guantanamo back. We don't want the prison, we don't want the base. And that also means that it's not, you cannot be friends if you send money to overthrow our government. So let's explain this. And this is about the embargo. This is something that you can find right now in the website of the historian of the Department of State, but was a secret memo from 1960. Was secret between 1960 and 1991. And now you can read it. It's easy, but it's a memorandum from the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs to the Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs. And look at the first point. The majority of Cubans support Castro. The lowest estimate I have seen is 50%. I don't know you, but 50% is half of the Cuban people. There is not effective political opposition. Okay, interesting. And they explain everything, but look at the last two sentences when he proposed what they want to do in order to change things in Cuba. And they say, we need to deny money and supplies to Cuba, to decrease monetary and real wage, to bring about hunger, desperation, and overthrow of the government. Unfortunately, that was the official policy of the United States in 1960, so before we declared that we were socialists. And look at this. It's a country, a government that at least has 50% of support, a country that don't have political opposition, and you want to create hunger, desperation, and overthrow of the government? That is the idea behind the embargo. That is what the embargo means. It's war. It's economic work. For us, it's too difficult to do business everywhere. We are not able to use the dollar. We are not able to use the dollar to buy anything abroad. We need to change dollars to euros or to another currency if we want to buy something. Every ship that goes to Cuba needs to wait 180 days to come to the United States. Imagine, we are an island. We are near the United States. So, and because we are not able to buy more products here, we sometimes need to buy products in Asia. How much time to bring those products? How much money we have to pay for the same products that we can buy here? So that is the embargo. That is what the embargo means. But the embargo is not anymore a bilateral issue between Cuba and the United States. For the last 25 years in United Nations General Assembly, Cuba presented a resolution asking for support to end embargo. For the last 25 years, that resolution has the majority of the votes. But look at this. In 2016, 191 votes supporting the resolution. Only two countries are in abstention, United States and Israel. But look at this. This is the board in United Nations General Assembly. So you can say right now that no country in the world supports the U.S. embargo. And this is what the embargo cost to Cuba. We are talking that in the last year, that means $4.6 billion. That is what we have to pay for the embargo. And in health, it's $82 million. In education, that means $1 million. In culture and sport, that means $29 million. And never forget our GDP. So with limited resources, we have to pay also the cost of the embargo. And for those who say, okay, but after December the 17th, no. After December the 17th, 11 entities has received fines from the Department of Treasury. So you can find this information online, and you can see how much money has cost to all these entities to do business with Cuba. What that means, that those entities are not going to do business in the future with Cuba, and for us, that means more another kind of cost for our country. This is President Obama in his last speech of the State of the Union in January 12, 2016. And look what he said. 50 years of isolating Cuba has failed to promote democracy and set us back in Latin America. That is why we restore diplomatic relations. Applause. You don't have to applause. It's what they did at the State of the Union. Opening the door to travel and commerce, positioning ourselves to improve the life of the Cuban people. Applause. So if you want to consolidate our leadership and credibility in the hemisphere, recognize that the Cold War is over. Lift the embargo. So let's think one second in this. According to all the polls, the majority of the Americans don't want the embargo. The majority of the Cuban Americans don't want the embargo. No country in the world supports the embargo. Your former president is asking to end the embargo. Why the embargo is still in place? The people that defend the embargo, who they represent? That is something that everybody needs to think about, you know? But in any case, of course, Guantanamo. You know, this is Cuba, and this is Guantanamo. The base, this is the territory that you occupy in Cuba since 1903, so more than a century ago. And this is because, probably you remember, that after the American-Spanish War, and the war was not in Spain and was not in America, but it's the Spanish-American War, you occupied Cuba. And during that occupation, we wrote our first constitution. And the governor of Cuba, a member of the U.S. military, called the people that was writing the constitution and say, okay, if you want a republic, you need to approve the Platt Amendment as part of your constitution. And since to that, we have Guantanamo Bay. And unfortunately, this was the senator, or Bill Platt from Connecticut, that wrote that amendment that was approved here in the Senate. But another agreement in 1934 gave the United States the use of Guantanamo in perpetuity. So it's forever, unless the United States unilaterally abandoned the base of both government agrees to end that. Imagine that you have somebody in your house, and that person has the right to stay in your house forever, unless he wants to go. Do you think it's a fair agreement? By the way, the territory that you have right now in Guantanamo is twice the territory that you have in Manhattan. That is how big it is. And you know how much do you pay for Guantanamo? Do you have any idea? Let me help. $4,085 per year. Somebody told me in New York, probably is what one apartment costs in Manhattan per month, the rent. And this is not about money. By the way, we don't collect the check. The problem is that we don't want the base there. We want the territory back. And about survivorship, according to the Congressional Research Service, you can see that between 96 and 2014, Congress appropriated some $264 million in funding for Cuban democracy efforts. So you are sending money, taxpayer money, not to create a school in Cuba, not to build a hospital in Cuba, to promote democracy in Cuba, to create democracy in Cuba. And I don't know if you are aware what is this, what is Radio Martí, Martí Noticias, and Martí is, well, you know, as I mentioned, Martí is our national hero. And in 1983, President Reagan created a radio station with the name of our national hero to broadcast propaganda against our country. Imagine that we create Radio Washington to broadcast Cuban propaganda against the United States. That's what happened in 1983. But after that, you create a TV station, and now you have a website. And you know how much cost to you? According to this congresswoman, Betty McCollum from Minnesota, she introduced this bill in the last Congress, and she said that this cost to you $770 million in the last 30 years. For that reason, she put this name, Stop Wasting Taxpayer Money on Cuba Broadcasting Ad, because you are losing money. Nobody in Cuba see Radio Martí or listen to Radio Martí or see TV Martí. Okay, the problem right now is that we need Congress if we want to change what is the laws that are obstacles for our relations between Cuba and the United States. The best bill that we have last year in Congress was freedom to travel to Cuba. And we have 54 senators, because the one that introduced the bill, and 53 co-sponsors that support that bill. And this is not a concession to Cuba. This is about your freedom. It's the only country that you're not free to go. And, of course, we have the same bill in the House, and also bills about trade, export, commercial opportunities. But again, we need Congress if we want something to happen. And right now, in the 115th Congress, we already have a project, the S275, that is about agricultural trade with Cuba, and we also have the freedom to travel to Cuba, HR 351. So what we can do, we need the support of people in Congress if we want to change what is happening between Cuba and the United States. Let me show you this, because I know how important agricultural exports are for Montana. And this is, you can see here, this is from the Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And according to them, Cuba buys 70 to 80% of our food abroad. What that means almost $2 billion of dollars. But it's prohibited by law to give credits to Cuba to buy agricultural products here in the United States. For that reason, we, for example, in 2014, we buy here in the United States $300 million, but in another countries, $1.8 billion of dollars. So you are losing opportunities. As I explained to every farmer I have the opportunity to meet, I say, it's not a problem for us to put more money in your pocket because we are going to put more food in our table. And look at this. We are talking about $2 billion of dollars. Remember that the embargo cost to Cuba $4.6 billion. So without the embargo, we are going to have more money to buy more food for our people or to improve many other things in our country. We have also opportunities in the health sector for collaboration. And so far, thanks to President Obama, we already had the opportunity for this. This is Roswell Park Institute in New York. And you can see they put on October 26th, history is being made today. We are proud to announce the launch of the first U.S. clinical trial for, this is the name of the product, a Cuban-made lung cancer vaccine. So we have very good biotech products. And unfortunately, we are not being able to bring those products here because we need a license. But they've received the license to bring this product, and right now they are doing the trials in New York. But look at this. This is the University of Illinois at Chicago, and they welcomed Cuban healthcare officials, three Cuban doctors, to Chicago in order to launch a partnership to improve community-based care. So it's good for both sides. It's not only good for Cuba. We have opportunity to improve the life here of the American people. And we have, for example, this product that is for diabetics. This is a product that we have right now in 26 different countries, and that helped to prevent the amputation of the foot for people that suffer from diabetics. And we don't have the license to bring that product here to United States. But here in the United States, you have like 20 million of people that are suffering from diabetics, and you have probably 75,000 people are going to require an amputation because they don't have this product that we have right now in Cuba. This was President Obama in Cuba. He visited Cuba in March last year. You can see photos of that visit. I'm not going to talk about the baseball game because we lost, so please don't ask. But this was one speech we gave the opportunity to President Obama to address the people of Cuba live. We broadcast live to all the people. And look what he said. As President of the United States, I have called on our Congress to lift the embargo. And the people applaud, because that is what the Cuban people want. And of course, he says it's time to lift the embargo, and he mentioned, I have made it clear that the United States has neither the capacity nor the intention to impose change on Cuba. What change comes will depend upon the Cuban people. We will not impose our political or economic system on you. We recognize that every country, every people must chart its own course and shape its own model. It's the only thing that we want, you know? So that was the official photo, and you can see more polls. 6 in 10 Americans, according to the New York Times, think restoring diplomacy with Cuba is mostly good for the U.S. The last and only president from the United States that visited Cuba was in 1928. Is somebody here from 1928? I only find one person from 1928 that, of course, was a child. He don't remember, but the only moment that we have a president of the United States in Cuba was in January 1928. President Obama said to the Cuban people, okay, the last president needs 3 days. I only need 3 hours. And we are still here. But, you know, we are already breaking barriers. We have right now the cruise ships to Cuba from Florida. We have the flights. We have every major carrier flying to Cuba. We have United, American, Delta, JetBlue. We already start one flight from Los Angeles. Alaska Air is traveling to Cuba, directly to Cuba. That is good. We have already three hotels in Cuba running by a U.S. company. And people say, are you okay with that? And I say, well, we have 20 hotels running by a Spanish company. Why not three hotels with the United States? So that doesn't mean that we're going to open the economy for everything. That means that we're going to find opportunities good for both sides, and we're going to protect our priorities. But why not? We signed agreements with all the major carriers here, Sprint, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon, so you're going to be able to use your phone when you travel to Cuba. And we signed one agreement with Google to improve the internet in Cuba. That is going to help also the American people. When the young people goes to Cuba, it's funny because they don't have internet and they are like crazy, you know? So we have two states, the state of Alabama and the state of California, that already passed resolutions asking for support in the U.S. Congress for relations between Cuba and United States. And you can see, for example, Alabama is a Republican state, but they said we have $32 million in trade with Cuba. And I say, it's with the embargo. Imagine without the embargo. And we have California that passed another resolution. I don't have time to explain about this, but this is something that happened in Pittsburgh. You know, the Roberto Clemente Bridge in Pittsburgh is near the Pirate Stadium. And one person from Pittsburgh went to Cuba and invited Cuban boxers to come to Pittsburgh. And he put a ring in the middle of the Roberto Clemente Bridge, very symbolic. And we did 11 boxing fights in that ring, very symbolic. Right now, that was July the 30th last year, and Pittsburgh City declared that day the day of friendship between Pittsburgh and Cuba. And right now, they are in Cuba for the rematch, and they are going to do the rematch in Pinar del Rio. So last year, almost 300 South Americans visited Cuba. And you can see 74% more than in 2015. And we're talking about only 300 South. We know that many people here want to go to Cuba, but people don't know how to go. And we have more than 300 South Cubans that live in the United States that have traveled to Cuba in direct flights. So it's good for both sides. The last two polls, I promise. But this are, again, very important. This is, again, Florida International University, and this was in November 2016, so a few months ago. And again, they show support of Cuban Americans in Miami for their relation. And look at this huge change. In 1991, only 14% of support for lifting the U.S. embargo. Right now, we are talking about 63% of support. And if you go to the generation between 1996 and 2016 is 80% of support. And this is from Pew, and you can see Pew Research made a poll in January 2015, July 2015, and December 2016. And you can see that the support is growing right now. And for the ending the trade embargo, we are talking about 73% of support for ending the trade embargo in December, so after the U.S. elections. This is the last thing that President Obama, almost the last thing that President Obama did with Cuba. And you can see, for example, that he signed the opportunity for Americans and Cuban can engage in joint medical research for the reason that this was October 14th. And for that reason, in October 26th, Roswell Park Institute started the trials for the cancer vaccine. And look at this part. I took this from the White House Twitter account, and they put, now there are not special limits on the amount of Cuban-made goods, including alcohol and cigars, that Americans can bring back with them from Cuba for personal use. So you cannot sell, but you can bring all the cigars that you want, all the alcohol. I don't know why it's so important, you know? But in any case, it's part of the Cuban and United States history, and this is sent to President Kennedy. Because I don't know if you are aware, that according to his press secretary, one day President Kennedy asked to his press secretary to buy all the cigars that he can. And the day after that, the press secretary said, okay, President, Mr. President, mission accomplished. I have 1,200 Cuban cigars. And President Kennedy said, okay, now the cigars are not allowed in the United States. He signed the embargo. He believed that 1,200 cigars were enough. History proved that he was wrong. But in any case, now it's available, again, to bring all the cigars. But about this, look at this, to improve the life of the Cuban people, but the cancer vaccine is for the American people, so it's also something good for the United States. Well, this is almost the last. This was our official position before the elections. We said that after President Obama, we hope that whoever occupies the White House has a policy that reflects the consensus of the public opinion of the U.S. citizens, including the Cuban immigration in that country, in favor of the improvement of relations with Cuba by a wide margin. And the day after the election, President Raul Castro sent a message to U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, congratulating him for his election. And this is one speech in the summit of the Latin American and Caribbean countries in January 25, 2017, and you can see what our president said. I wish to express Cuban willingness to continue negotiation pending bilateral issues with the United States on the basis of equality, reciprocity, and respect for the sovereignty and independence of our country, and to continue the respectful dialogue and cooperation on issues of common interest with the new government of President Donald Trump. So we don't close the door because we don't believe that that is the path. We believe that engagement, opportunities is the correct path. So for the end, I have the same questions. What do you know about Cuba? Probably, I hope you have more information about my country already. Would you like to visit Cuba? I hope you have more reasons to go now to Cuba. Do you consider that Cuba and the United States can have normal relations? I really hope that you have more reason to support this, that we can have a normal relations. I cannot change number four, probably in the future. But I hope now you have one idea if we receive fair treatment in the media here in the United States. So this is a commercial. You don't have to pay nothing. But if you want more information about Cuba, these are our Twitter accounts. You can see my ambassador and myself. And we have a Facebook page in Spanish and English. And we are trying to put everything that is happening between Cuba and the United States. I'm going to put information about my visit here to Montana and all the meetings I am doing right now.